Are you recording now?
Branch Out.
A podcast from the Royal Botanic Gardens, Sydney. In September 1994, David Noble went abseiling in Wollemai National Park, just north of the Blue Mountains. Little did he know, he would end up discovering one of the world's oldest and rarest tree species, thought to be extinct for at least 60 million years.
Now to the botanical equivalent of a pet dinosaur.
And we trek to the secret location of a living fossil.
This is the botanical find of the century.
When it's more Australian than Sydney Harbour Bridge, it just reeks with charisma.
I'm hitching a ride to a real-life Jurassic Park, the last stand of one of the world's rarest and strangest trees, the Wollemai Pine.
So he was looking down at the ground like we are now, at these branches that are just lying on the canyon floor.
That's principal research scientist from the Royal Botanic Gardens, Sydney, Dr. Kathy Offord, who has been researching the Wollemai Pine ever since it was discovered.
And he thought that was different, and he looked up and he saw this enormous tree that he didn't recognise. So he took samples back to his boss, and the story rolled out from there. The discovery of the Wollemai Pine was on the front page of nearly every major newspaper in the world.
It captured the world's attention, and it was dubbed a living fossil. Nestled in a remote canyon, a tiny pocket of 40 metre tall prehistoric pines that were hundreds, if not thousands of years old, were growing. And for the last 24 years, scientists and conservationists such as Dr. Kathy Offord have been trying to protect them. Today, Kathy is taking me inside a purpose-built enclosure for the Wollemai Pines that have grown really tall at the Australian Plant Bank in Western Sydney. She came up with a really great name for it too, the giraffe cage.
Well, it's pretty obvious standing in front of it why it's called a giraffe cage.
Inside the giraffe cage is a small forest of magnificent Wollemai Pines, which have grown to 8 metres tall, which is actually 2 metres taller than an adult male giraffe.
So these are the oldest Wollemai Pines in cultivation in the world. They come from the original seeds that we were collected from the wild.
And in the wild, there were only about 100 trees growing in that canyon.
You find it hard to believe that things are still alive today that essentially haven't changed much for perhaps 100 or 200 million years. It's of a lineage of its own. And so what was surprising to botanists was that it's still existed, even though it was existing in such a remote location, about 150 kilometres northwest of Sydney.
It's so close to us, right under our nose.
Right under the nose of many, many botanists who have said, oh, well, I went down that area and I've been all over that and I never saw that plant. And it's actually surprising because when you see them in the wild, they're very large, they've got very different looking stature, they look like nothing else. The first time that I visited the Wollemai Pine in the wild, I came down the gorge. It's quite a difficult journey. You have to walk for quite some hours and then abseil down some cliff faces. And then you come to a point where you can see out over the gorge, and you can see the Wollemai Pines emerging above the canopy. And it was quite a magical moment for me. I never thought that I would be able to see them in the wild.
After over 20 years, the location of the Wollemai Pine site is still a secret, even after it continues to take the world by storm with widespread media coverage and podcasts.
When the Wollemai Pine was first discovered, it was decided by the team of scientists and managers that we would have to limit the number of people who visited the site because it's so fragile. We had to control the movement of things like soil on our feet or seeds that might even be in our backpacks. We knew that introducing diseases or competing species may mean the death of this plant, and so we had very strict procedures for the number of people who could visit at one time.
VIP access.
Not VIPs, no, it was the people who needed to be there.
Next, Mark Horstman joins the select group of people lucky enough to see the world's rarest tree growing in the wild.
What if the Premier or the Prime Minister or the Queen wanted to see a Wollemite pine in the wild?
Well, unless they're doing a PhD doctorate in research that it'd have some potential impact on preserving the species, I'm afraid the answer is going to be no.
When we visit the Wollemite pine in the wild, we do all sorts of quite strange activities like washing our boots with methylated spirits, disinfecting all of our equipment between taking samples between the trees, very careful as to where we would walk in the wild. So we had very defined tracks that weren't walking on the roots of the trees. With a plant that's so rare in the wild, it won't take much to tip it into extinction. So now that we've discovered it, we now have a responsibility to look after it.
So what are scientists doing to protect this precious pinosaur?
We've got some plants over there that we, a few years ago, set fire to.
Yeah, I know. Doesn't sound quite right, setting fire to a rare plant. However, a bushfire could wipe out the Wollemite pines in the wild. So some are grown here at the garden for crucial fire experiments.
We found that a mild fire, in fact, stimulates the growth of Wollemite pine. But a very severe fire will kill them. We're painting these trunks with chemicals that will be absorbed by the plant.
Yes, I know how this sounds too, guys. First fire and now chemicals.
We're looking at the moment at how we can use chemical control to protect the plants from Phytophthora.
Phytophthora is a deadly plant disease that has been causing root rot in several of the pines in the wild. This chemical treatment could be the answer, though.
Like a flu injection for Wollemite pine.
While researchers such as Kathy have been out in the lab and in the field investigating ways to safeguard the future of the Wollemite pine using science, a strategy of a different kind was rolled out in 2005.
As the wild trees battle to survive, there's an unusual plan to save the species by planting them in backyards around the world.
A collection of prehistoric pine trees has gone up for auction.
Nature lovers finally have a chance today to create their own Jurassic Park.
To find it was a great surprise. But now to make it available to everyone to see the romance of it and the excitement of it and the thrill of it and the perspective that it gives you about life on Earth, it's a thrill.
The main aim of the commercialisation program was to relieve the natural populations from pressure that might be put on them from people illegally poaching the plants in the wild, and also just to satisfy that amazing curiosity that people have for unusual conifer species or species that have the kind of superstar status that the Wollemite pine has.
Discovering the Wollemite pine was like finding a family of dinosaurs, and people all over the world were captivated, including Sir David Attenborough, you just heard before.
I gave a tree to my children's school when they were first released commercially, and some of the girls at the school used to pray to the Wollemite pine and leave little messages. It said spiritual. Some people find it a spiritual type of experience interacting with the Wollemite pine. I've been working with them now for over 20 years. There isn't a day that goes by that I'm not doing something that's associated with Wollemite pine. I have some correspondents who annually send me their photos of of their plants. There's a particularly lovely Italian doctor who sends me pictures. He's got several Wollemite pines. He's very, very attached to them, and he shares his enthusiasm with me. And so they are now growing all over the world in both private and public gardens.
So they were discovered in one tiny little place, one little area of Wollemite National Park in New South Wales, and now you can find them in Italy.
They've gone from the wild to the world.
Even though their existence is fragile, let's not forget Wollemite pines are tough for having hung on for so long. They've got some pretty cool survival tricks up their bark.
One of the really interesting features of Wallamite pine, and it does distinguish it from other members of the family, is that it is a self-coppicing tree.
What does that mean?
Okay, so that means that it can grow extra trunks.
What?
Yes, it will grow in the wild up to 150 trunks that can emerge sometimes right from the base of the tree, and then it forms a clump.
One mega trunk.
A mega clump of trunks. We think that that may be one of the reasons that it survived as long as it has in these quite adverse conditions. It is adapted to growing on the sides of the canyon, mm-hmm. And it grows into off rock fissures. The trunks are often damaged by rock falls or wind. So if one trunk falls over, another one can take over. It is curious that we have a tree that, or have a species that shows so little genetic diversity in the wild, and yet it still exists. It still produces seeds.
It hung on.
It's really a survivor.
And the ability to produce seeds is crucial. And the Wallamite pine has an interesting way of doing it because it has both male and female sexual reproductive cones. Yep, it's time to talk about plant sex, guys. The birds and the bees. Only the Wallamite doesn't need birds or bees.
Well, let's just say they're very male-looking.
Yeah, I'm just about to say that. Dr. Kathy Offord is pointing out one of the male cones on one of the giraffe cage Wallamite pines. As she said, it's male-looking. So instead of being a normal round cone shape, it's long.
September or October this year, the male cones are mature and they release pollen, usually from wind gusts, and then the pollen is often transferred to land on the cone.
Kathy is referring to the female cone now, which is like a round tennis ball size, higher on the tree.
Which has its scales open and ready to receive the pollen. It's a bit like birthing elephants. It takes 2 years from the first appearance of the female cone to when it produces seeds. The problem for us is there's so few seeds that are produced in each cone. Some of the cones have no viable seeds produced at all, and some have maybe 20 or 30. You have to know what a viable seed looks like, and it maybe that's something we can look at in the lab.
Now we're leaving the towering giraffe cage Wallamite pines and heading up inside the lab of the Australian Plant Bank.
So what we've got here is a Wallamite pine cone. It's a female cone.
Yeah, that thing is.
Shh! We're rolling! Yeah.
That's seed bank curator Graham Arrington from episode one, teasing Kathy about her professional obsession with the Wallamite.
So what we have here is a Wallamite pine cone. It's a female cone, and it has around 250 of these little scales. Oh, they're quite beautiful. So they're about a centimetre and a half long by the same wide. They've got a little groove on the top of them, and that's where the seed sits. And this is what a seed looks like. And you can see that they've just, like, they're quite dark brown on the top. That's the oil coming through. That's how we actually know that they're viable, as well as being kind of slightly fatter. So in this particular case, this cone here has produced 14 viable seeds.
14 out of about 250 might not sound great, but Kathy says it's a pretty good result. There are many ways to test if a seed is any good too. And one of the ways is to perform a nice little drop test to compare a good seed with a bad seed. See if you can hear the difference.
I'm doing the bad seed.
I'm doing the good seed.
Do you need to hear it again? It's pretty tricky. Okay, here's the bad seed. And this is the good seed.
Yeah, if you've got good ears, you can hear that.
So where do the good seeds go? Well, some get to grow up into plants in the nursery. But another way scientists and horticulturists grow Wallamite pines is by taking a cutting from the plant. It's time to check out some tiny ones growing inside the propagation house. Teeny tiny little baby Wallamites are sprouting out and growing inside this warm and humid little hub. They're so cute.
Oh, oh. This plant doesn't have any roots on it yet. What we're trying to do is to encourage it to grow roots. So we've used a chemical that will stimulate root growth, and so it will re-establish itself as a plant.
As I'm taking a closer look, I notice they have labels with numbers and information on each of them. I can't help but think of this propagation house as like the little room where newborn babies go in the hospital.
So what we can see on this label is that the material is from the wild site, site one, from tree three, and from stem eight.
Everything's trackable, traceable.
Everything's trackable.
Can't hide anymore, Wollemies.
So when these Wollemie babies have established themselves as plants, it's time to head to the nursery.
So what we have here is 400 seedlings of Wollemie pine, and these will be put into areas that we think will sustain Wollemie pine growth.
Putting plants into an area outside of their original or natural habitat is what scientists call ex situ conservation. It literally means off-site conservation, and it's a way to help protect a species from going extinct.
So it's new territory?
It's new territory, and then we'll be monitoring these for years and years to understand how well they establish. Science never really ends. It's always the more questions you answer, the more questions you come up with. Our history of Wollemie pine is only just over 20 years old, and I think we could be researching this species alone for many more decades. We use that love of Wollemie pine to get people to understand the plight of threatened species in the wild, because there are many other species that are just as rare as this, or even rarer, but perhaps they just don't have the appeal that this plant has.
Thanks for listening to Branch Out. The next episode is the last in our first five-part series. You'll go deep into the heart of the Australian Plant Bank, where over 1 million seeds are stored in our Doomsday Seed Vault. Entering the vault.
Is it chilly in here?
How cold is it in here?
It's minus 20 degrees.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to stay in here too long.
Scientists here are storing seeds in liquid nitrogen, growing bits of plants in jelly, and experimenting with other ways to protect the future of threatened plants and all life that depends on them.
We rely on plants for so much. It's our source of food. It's our, even if we're carnivores, it's the source of the food that feeds the carnivores. It's the source of the oxygen that we breathe. It maintains the climate. It stops the soil from eroding. They're just important in so many ways.
If you want to know more about how world-leading scientists are developing solutions to the world's most critical environmental and biodiversity issues, search for the Royal Botanic Gardens Sydney and follow the links to our science page. You can subscribe to Branch Out on any podcast app, and please leave us a rating and a review if you like the show. It helps more people find us. I'm Vanessa Fuchs, and I produce the show with Miles Martignoni.